Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. And that au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
The delicious sound of McDonald's breakfast sausage hitting the grill. Hot and savory sausage that makes any breakfast a great one. And if sausage is the taste you love, you're going to love this savory deal. Because now you can get three tasty breakfast sandwiches for just $1. A sausage McGriddles, sausage McMuffin, or sausage biscuit, now each for just a buck. Hot and tasty, fast and easy. That's breakfast at McDonald's. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
And we are live. Live in the South here. Okay, yeah, I got it up on Spreaker. What was I going to say? Hang on. This is the Supernatural Substation. Caught me napping. It's Friday night, the 21st of March.
22nd.
It's the 22nd already?
Yes.
Can't be. It is. My phone says it. Okay, scratch that one. Okay, so whoever's keeping track, it's the 22nd. You may know better than me now. Anyway, I'm sure you know by now that I'm Aline Pestanio, and giving me my straight, this is my straight, I'm like Jerry Lewis to your Dean Martin, Bernadine. I'm like,
oh, no.
Like Lou Costello to your Bud Abbott. You know, it's like you're the straight man. So, and that's Bernadine LeBlanc. She keeps me in line.
I keep you focused.
She does, actually. I was just talking to her. We should write a book, Bernadine. Yeah. Everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a writer right now. I can't call myself a writer because I haven't been writing. I've been researching, but at least I'm working. So, and I am working on a new book of like real life ghost stories and stuff that have happened to me. So that's my idea. Like you and I, you know, we're going to combine them and see what happened. We'll talk. I'll talk about it. We should do it.
Yeah. Now,
you know, between us, we've got like 100 years worth of stories.
I have journals full.
That's good. I'm glad. I have a memory full. You better get it before like dementia.
That's why I have to write it down.
I can remember like the price of a school lunch in 1978, but what did I want in the kitchen just now? I have no idea. I mean, it's short-term memory. It's gone. It's gone with age. So, and the only way you can keep from aging is to die. So I think I'll just age happily. So what's going on, Bernadine? We have a guest tonight at 9:30, 10:30 if you're on the East Coast. And I don't know what time it is in Shanghai, but her name is Annie Wilder. And I saw her on actually My Ghost Stories, but when it originally aired. And she is the author of Trucker Ghost Stories. And there's several other books that she's authored. But I've actually read Trucker Ghost Stories twice. Because the stories are really so interesting. Basically, what she did was compiled all these stories from truckers, you know, their weird experiences out on the road, which is always, I always have an interest in that, you know. So we'll have her on, let's see, about 10 minutes from now or so we'll be calling in. So I'm glad to have her and tell her how much I liked her book. And she's got a couple other ones, so we'll find out what's going on with her. So what's going on with you?
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old, same old.
Yeah. Yep.
I noticed, you know, a common, oh, well, and Pete's going to be joining us. He has the flu.
Yes.
Hello, Pete. That, I don't know if he's listening, but, you know.
Second week. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Poor thing.
I know. He needs to get that flu shot. I was looking, you know, we've been talking about how Destination America kind of, they had like the solid back-to-back paranormal and all. Well, it seems like it moved. They're all under these umbrella networks, but over on Travel Channel. And then there's another one called FYI, I think. And they have My Ghost Stories, all the they have Ghost Adventures and My Ghost Stories and What is it? Paranormal Survivor was on, but there's some new ones. There's, or that appear to be new from this year in 2018, Haunted Case Files, which is a new season. Paranormal Caught on Camera, which has been pretty interesting. They don't make any, you know, like judgment calls on what it is. They just show you the stuff. It's kind of like the stuff from YouTube. You know, different clips of things happening, and they just leave it up to you, which is, I like that. You know, nobody gets in there and says, it's definitely that. You know, nobody says that, because you can say, then you'll find me arguing with the TV. It's not that, it's something else, you know. But so, I mean, I'm just saying that they've, it seems to have gotten like a last gasp or something, and there's some new stuff coming out. So I don't know if you can yet, but it's all on demand when you do get the cable and everything, but or whatever it is that you're going to get. But those are the networks that it's on. Sometimes every now and then on Destination America, A Haunting, which is like so freaking old. A Haunting, right. Is like, I mean, that was coming on when Sightings first came on. That's how old that show is. And you know, so I mean, it's been years and years and years. So it's, and the Dead Files, they have those, and I think they have new ones. And of course, Ghost Adventures.
You know. Yay.
I was, before the show, it had come on, I was doing something else, and it was just on that station, and I could hear, we are about to investigate. I mean, it's just like,
no.
There's a period between
them. Is that Zach doing that?
Because, yes, we are about to investigate. And then if it's some name like, you know, the Hoop and Hollow, whatever, just say it all at once. That, you know, I mean, it's just like, oh my God, you know, a Lamborghini. Every time I see him, I'm like, he drives a freaking Lamborghini. This idiot, you know, I mean, I'm okay, idiot. If you ever hear it, Zach, whatever. But I'm like, okay, whatever. I'd like to steal it and give it to a homeless man who probably has more real ghost experiences out on the street than he did. But so, yeah, I mean, it's not it's not the usual dearth of programming. You know, if you're interested
they
in that,
their game, that's good.
Well, glad, you know,
they had to.
Yeah, they reached the, you know, like they reached the plateau, and then, you know, they spread out. In other words, they went lateral on different shows and all. And the Paranormal Caught on Camera really gives like a variety. It's like, you know, sea monsters, Gettysburg ghosts, some of the things like the haunted school, the banging lockers of the school that you see on YouTube and all that. Some things have already been like disproven, but you know, it's like I like to just watch that stuff and make up my own mind. You know, it's entertaining. And then unless they're seriously trying to stand there and say, you know, that big old flying insect is an orb. But but yeah, and you know, I kind of put that all on my ghost story, because there's a lot of people on that show now that I'm looking at it after, you know, years, that every orb is something. So it's like, it kind of like may have single-handedly caused, and I'm sure YouTube had something to do with it, just this whole, you know, 180 turn away from the orbs, you know. But like we say, don't dismiss orbs altogether. You know, sometimes you do it to your peril. But yeah, they're in Haunted Hospital. Oh, that's another one. Paranormal 911 and Haunted Hospitals. I think Paranormal 911 comes on Tuesday night. And those are pretty much what it says. The strange calls that EMT and police take when they go out. Like there was one where they got a phone call. And this happens, it seems to happen a lot, where they got a phone call about a car crash, and, you know, hurry, hurry, the car had gone off and rolled off the road in some hill, you know, some hilly area. And when they got there, the driver was dead, and there was a child in the car that was alive. I'm sure you've heard this, because, you know, that's what happened is, you know, the ghost somehow managed to communicate to, you know, the 911 that the child was in the car, it was the ghost of the driver. In this case, it was a father, and they had a toddler in the back in the car seat. And, you know, the woman that took the call and got there first, she was like, so, I mean, those are really spooky, because those are professional people, you know. Yeah. And Haunted Hospitals is excellent, because we all know.
We do, yes.
No, hospitals are haunted, you know. But I did hear some clown on my ghost story saying, well, it's because all them people die in there. And I was like, no. I went to reach reach through the TV and smack him. No, it's not, you idiot. And it's this long litany. I could see in my mind like a punch list of, yeah, they have attachments and they have this and they have that. It's built. I was like, there's 100 million reasons why a hospital is haunted. And the last one is people dying in there. Okay. Of course, you know, I mean, most people just go on. But I mean, at least they're, you know, they're farming it out to new ideas and stuff, which is that's interesting. You know, when you hear from police and you hear from emergency personnel and they have these weird, you know, experiences, and because, I mean, we've all heard people we know that are police or EMTs and they have some weird things happen to them, like in Katrina, when they were getting 911 calls from an area that was underwater and nobody was alive and all the electricity and everything had gone out. So, you know, there should be no calls from landline when everybody's on their roofs or drowned. But, you know, so that's one weird thing that it's always creepy to think about. So yeah, they have some pretty good shows on there. So that's Travel Channel. And what is it called? FYI, whatever that stands for. And I want to say that Investigation Discovery had it on a couple of times. But, yeah, just look around for them. It's something to watch. Because it's always good to have it on in the background. I'm not one of those people who has the news on in the background.
Right. We just don't watch that stuff.
I stay away from, look, I watch it, but, you know, I watch, like, you know, get up in the morning, you want to see if the world exploded or, you know, if we're at war or something, I turn it on. But I can only take so much of that.
Yeah, I just see it through my phone. You know, the notifications.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I won't sit up to watch the news. People, yeah. You know, local people will be like, did you see what happened over here?
No.
Do you watch the news? No.
I look in New Orleans, I'd be like, wait, let me tell you, somebody got shot. Got shot.
Really?
Oh, really? And they had a car chase, and the guy got away and killed somebody. That happened this week in New Orleans, okay? The police apparently are under some kind of order where they won't pursue. Now, I understand it's an urban area and it's built up area, right? But the police, yes, they did a stop, I think, and they realized the guy was a felon or whatever. And he fled in the car and they chased him only so far, but they didn't continue to chase him. But just because they stopped chasing doesn't mean that the criminal knows that, right? He careens out of control up on, I don't even know where, somewhere in the Broadmoor area, plows into this beauty salon. You know how you have the buildings on the corner with the door is on the facing the corner? It was one of those old buildings. Plowed into it. It was a hair salon and beauty supply, and they had people upstairs and downstairs in this, and burst into a fireball. You know?
Oh, wow.
Now, I couldn't have predicted that one in New Orleans, but I know right now as we speak, somebody's running away from the police, right? And possibly shooting at the police. So, yes. Gotta love New Orleans. And it's heating up, so the natives are going to be restless. You know, what can I say? So, I haven't spent, but I think I can count on two hands the times that I've been down there since the big statue thing. I won't go, and I won't spend money, but I also value my life. You know, it's like, no, I'm not ready. Not ready for that yet. So, but yeah, that was the big excitement. It's like, oh, and it was a shame too, because the whole thing just, I mean, blew up. Whoever was in the car, they were burnt to a crisp. So there you go. I mean, it's like, there's a bunch of ghosts right there. Bam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're pushed out of their bodies. You know, I just hope when that happens, I'm not in the Unity hair salon on the corner of whatever, Melpomene or something at, you know, in Broadmoor. I mean, maybe I'll, you know, maybe climbing a hill in Scotland would be more my thing. I don't know. So going to sleep on a beach in the sun, you know, or something, than just passing of natural causes, you know. That's kind of morbid, but the closer I get to it, it's like, damn.
You're trying to choose the best way, right?
I'm like, wait, you know.
Making your bucket list.
Well, I got a bucket list, but I'm like, you know, I can talk all about it up to the top of the hill. But now I'm like on that hill looking down. I'm like, wait, we all go there. But It doesn't help. That's an interesting thing. It doesn't help really being someone who knows, even if you took faith out of it, you know, from a cult's perspective and you from a paranormal or supernatural perspective, we know there's life after life, you know. So, but that's not, it's the whole idea of leaving, you know, and having to go through that, Lord, you know. it's true. And unfortunately, like when we lost my dad in 2015, I have to say it, the older ones were like, how old are you? We're asking all the cousins were like, no, who are you? Wait, you're up next, you know? So, and we figured it out. I'm like eighth in line. So I'm like, oh, I'm good.
You good for now.
But I'm sure there's a lot of people who wish I wasn't on Facebook. I'll tell you about Facebook, okay? And I'll tell you about this freaking... One day, I think I put it as my status. It might have been Wednesday. I picked up my phone because I go online on my banking thing and I say, how much money do I... How poor am I today? And I picked up the phone to do that. And then I saw something come on Facebook. And it was like, that was like 11 o'clock in the morning and like 4:30. Okay. It's like typing on the freaking, you know, you bastard and all this other stuff. It's not that I didn't do things in between. It's that I never got off of Facebook. And I was like, that's it. I mean, I literally wanted to throw my phone away, you know, just throw it at the wall because it's like 11 o'clock to 4:30 with minor interruptions in between of constant, you know, back and forth with, you're an idiot. These people telling you, you're an idiot. You're this, you're a hater. You're full of this. You know, and by the time, and just, you know, it's like, I have pity. I really do pity the one that was the last one because I was like, oh, I've had enough of this. You shut up. And then my phone now tells me screen time for some reason on these stupid phones. Your screen time is down from last week. I'm like, good. You know, it's the only way I know that some part of my brain has been, you know, saved. It's like, good, my screen time is down. I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was like, forget it. I'm throwing the freaking phone away, you know?
Weren't you in Facebook jail at one time?
Once. Once for 3 days.
I remember that.
And you know what it was? And I think I talked about it at the time. I don't know about you, but I think this is hilarious. There's a meme floating around with Hitler laughing. He's like, laughing at something at Berchtesgaden, you know, probably laughing at his dog. And it says, I did not see an AZI that coming, right? It's a meme in response to, whoa, I did not see that coming. Only it's Hitler. Some moron, okay? And it's on some thread from somewhere, I don't even know where, okay, reports that. Some moron, and I have her name, with no sense of humor at all. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, are you an idiot? I mean, really, you have no sense of humor? It's a picture of, but not every picture of Hitler means I'm a Nazi or, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, it's funny. And it was in response to another Nazi thing that some guy on the same thread was posting, right? I mean, it was, everybody was joking about what we were talking about at that point. Mm-hmm. She goes and reply 3 days in freaking Facebook. So when I got back on, and I know who she is, I go to her page and she's got a picture of Hitler. And it's the one where it's the little golden book where he's on a sled and it says, everybody I hate is Hitler. Irony, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So when she gets banned, when I go back to her profile, or I have a friend of a friend of a friend do it, and she can go to jail for 3 days, Facebook jail. But apparently, I mean, they'll put you in for like 30 days because my friend Melanie, our friend Melanie on there, mm-hmm. she doesn't mince it. She's in fact a little more vocal than I am. If y'all can believe it or not,
that's hard.
Was 30 days. She got a month. First, she got a week, and then she got a month. and then my other friend, who is stronger than anybody, I say Facebook friend, she gives up Facebook for Lent. She's real Catholic, you know, or I just think of her as real Catholic. I haven't even told her that. And she's like, you know, she's gone for Lent and she gives it up. I'm like, how can you do that? I understand that, but I don't think I don't think the people that I like that I talk to on Facebook, I would miss for a month, you know, but she's got more willpower than I, you know, whoever said I will, I, some things I do, but that it was like, I really admire that. Cause I, if I didn't, you know, if I didn't have Facebook, I don't know what I would do. Right. Who would I argue with? Where would I post my memes?
Oh my gosh.
Serious.
Do you remember way back with MySpace?
God, yeah, you're going way back now.
That's way back. That's like the first Facebook.
Do you know MySpace still exists?
Really?
Yeah, I found my profile and it asked me, do you want to sign in with Facebook?
Oh, wow.
Facebook has bought everything. Instagram belongs to them.
LinkedIn. Yeah, but
hello?
Oh, hey, Annie.
Hi.
Hey. You see, what happens is you get dumped into the middle of our conversation. It's just the way that it works on Skype. That's all right. We know what's going on. You're like, what the heck? You know? Anyway, this is Annie Wilder. She's our guest tonight. I'm Aline Pastanio, and also with me is Bernadine LeBlanc, who I know contacted you to set up the appearance here. So thank you for agreeing to be on the show.
Oh, thank you for the invite. I really appreciate it. Sorry for my lack of tech savvy.
You're in here with the pros.
Hello.
Like, what? If we didn't have a guy managing it, I mean, you know, and it's Mercury retrograde, so.
Right, and the moon is void, of course, I think, too. I just actually opened up Skype, like, was I going to get Skyped or called? So yeah, I'll shut that. Yeah.
And he's probably pressing the button going, what happened? But I was talking about you. I introduced you earlier when we did get on because we're talking generally about My Ghost Story, the series being back on TV. And that was where I saw you the first time. And I immediately went and bought you. It was Trucker Ghost Stories at that time. That was under your name, okay. Author Troy. And I went immediately and I got it. I got the Kindle version. I've read it like two times. It's so good. I just love, I guess, that kind of, you know, the human experience, but the idea of truckers being out there, you know, at all hours of the day and nights. I just love the book.
Exactly.
And I'm going to have to pick up on a couple of your other ones too. But let me tell everybody a little bit about you. I'll tell you what we like to do is just let you introduce yourself, whatever you want to say, and then we'll just get into it. So go ahead, Annie.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, again, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your show. Let's see. I live in a house filled with spirits. I live in a really cool old Victorian house. I feel very fortunate. I've lived here for coming up on 25 years now. It's in Hastings, Minnesota, which is a historic river town, really quaint. And, but, you know, a little scruffy around the edges, so not overdone quaint. It's like, it's just got some really cool old buildings and downtown and the river. And I want to talk to you about the river because you guys are you down in New Orleans?
Mississippi.
Okay, so you're it's at the other end of the river.
Yeah, I'm sort of where it dumps out.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm not at the headwaters, but I'm only an hour or two from the headwaters. Three maybe. But anyway, so I live in a great old haunted house. I used to work at Llewellyn Publications for 13 years, so I got to read a lot of great stories about all kinds of paranormal and metaphysical things and meet a lot of interesting people. And I did write a book about my house, and through that, I had so many requests for tours that I decided to set up haunted tea parties. Mm-hmm. And I have been offering haunted tea parties, and then I had a lot of people coming back because I do invite the spirits to participate at every party. And what I say on my website is the spirits are invited to every party or event. They have free will. They may or may not attend, but almost always they do make their presence known. And I have a real I guess companionable relationship with the spirits here. It's kind of a partnership, and I have let them know that if they are not participating in an extended way in events and tea parties, then I will know it is time for me to move on to other things. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. It's like, this is great. It helps people have a positive experience with the spirit world that is memorable and you know, meaningful. So then I will be at peace if it's no longer time to do that. I'm kind of going with the flow. And I did get to, so I've written 3 books. One was about my house, House of Spirits and Whispers. And I've actually got the old sea poster doors lit up right now, and I'm looking into the parlor. I have the spotlight on because one of the ways the 2 old-fashioned spirit girls that are associated with the door communicate is by flicking the light off and on. I wrote a book about my family's true spirit stories and ghost stories and weird events, which, because we have people who like to write stuff down and tell our own stories in my family, I was able to go back to the 1850s, basically, with stories on both sides of the family. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I thought it was fun for me to do. And then I wrote Trucker Ghost Stories, which was kind of a departure, but that was so much fun because that was collecting stories, true ghost stories from people, like you said, the people, mostly men, but some women too, that are out there. Like, this is what I love kind of like about all the trail cameras and stuff. It's like,
oh yeah.
That capturing so much weird stuff because these cameras are out where people didn't have cameras before, you know? Mm-hmm. So Trucker Ghost Stories, I came up with that idea because at the time I saw Truckers and Deadliest Catch were like 2 really, really popular shows, and they've still got, you know, some of these kind of uber masculine profession shows that are very popular. And I just thought it was a great mashup of paranormal and Truckers. So did you see me on the
I saw both of it. The first time I saw you, you were talking about Trucker Ghost Stories. And sometimes I see them out of sync, but the second one, soon as you said House of Spirits and I looked at it, I remembered that one was about your house, and I saw you then too. So yeah. I recognized the book cover from seeing it on TV. But the Trucker Ghost is the first thing that introduced me to you. I just love the book. I like that kind of, because Dean and I often talk about it. It's like, you know, somebody's out there on the graveyard shift. Yeah. And when you think about it, because when you're talking about masculine shows, it's like Highway Through Hell or the Ice Road Truckers.
Right.
My daughter and I like to watch. Well, she has me watching it as long as it's not like the deep tune or whatever where I get seasick looking at it. But, you know, it's just a thing. And like they had this remote, I'll just say this one episode where they had a trucker, these really perilous Canadian highways. And they had a trucker that lost control on this really sketchy, you know, bridge and had rolled off the side, and they got to him and they pulled it all up, and then he passed away from his injuries. So, and immediately I think there's another ghost, you know, for the highway.
Exactly.
And I always think about that, like when I travel, you know, it's in the middle of the night, somebody's traveling dark roads and having these weird experiences, you know, and it fascinates me because I love a road trip, but that's kind of what drew me. I mean, I just, the stories, and you should write another one. You should get more trucker ghost stories because I just think it's, you know, it speaks to me anyway. I was like, that is so cool.
Oh,
I'm like a teenager again, you know, wow. he took a left turn and it's like Twilight Zone. So, you know.
I just read one of those stories. That's one of my favorites. There's one, I was looking to see if I had any stories in this book from New Orleans, because I was feeling like I did, but there, some of my favorites, there's so many good ones in this book, but 2 of my favorites were guys who ended up, like you said, you take a turn and all of a sudden you're like, wait, where am I? You're in what should be familiar territory, and hours of being on roads that are just weird. There's nobody there. There's no people. There's no place to turn around. I love this stuff. And one thing that I really wanted with Trucker Ghost Stories was to, and I actually had this written into my contract with the publisher, that I wanted a very light edit. I said, I want this to sound like like blue collar working people who are, I consider myself basically that, that how they talk. I want
yeah,
this to
their
be
vernacular,
in their own voice.
Their tone. Yeah, exactly. In their own words. Yeah. I noticed that. And I like that too. So I honestly, you really should do another one. I'm going to let Dean get here in a minute, but my daughter, when she was in the Navy, she was in San Diego in the last part of it, and she drove home for Christmas and then had to drive back to get back at a certain time. And the drive back was at night. And we had this Waze, that app on the phone where you can look and you can see where they are. She's like going through the Badlands. Going through the Badlands, no cars on the road because it's Christmas night and she's heading back. And I'm thinking of stuff like you put in the book, right? Oh my God, you know, she's on this highway. So I'm watching her in Waze, and then she texts me and she says, Mom, I just saw a tumbleweed go across the road. And I'm like, oh my God. So, you know, I'm from New Orleans. I'm like, a tumbleweed, really? You know, and I'm thinking she's out in the middle of nowhere. And she's talking about it. Yeah. Yeah, and she's like, whoa, the only thing is her and a tumbleweed. And that's creepy. I mean, you know, that alone is, as a mother, it was freaking me out. It was like I was, you know, until she got to her apartment, it was like, I'm just a fit to be tied. But I'm thinking, you know, out there, and nobody was out there, except at one point somebody came alongside, well, not exactly alongside of her, but was in the other lane and following her a little bit, and then went ahead of her. Oh. And she remembered somebody told her, I think it was, I don't know where it was, but somebody said that sometimes when they see helpful people, not evil people, like some truckers woman traveling alone, and they'll either report it to each other and they'll say, you know, keep an eye out. So it was something like that. But I mean, it's like, so the drive back with me when I went out there and she moved home, we were traveling at night, but we had everything in the car and I couldn't see anything. I couldn't look around, you know, it was like I had a cat.
Right.
And I mean, we were just packed in the car and it was like, I can only see in front of me. It was like, you know, looking through a box. I'm like, oh my God, you know, so, but same roads, but it wasn't the same experience. So, but anyway, let me let Dean get
on.
Yeah. When she was doing it by herself, it was like, and that's weird because it wasn't creepy when I was doing it. Of course it could have been if we didn't have like a million things and a cat in a car, you know, but you know,
Beverly Hillbillies.
The idea. Yeah. Beverly Hills. Yeah. Me on top. That would have been great. That would have been better than in the car. And the poor cat was in this collapsible. This is how we are on the show. Like, he's in this collapsible cat carrier. I just couldn't figure out how to get it right. So he just was mad and he laid down and it just like an accordion. It just like went down. I was like, are you okay? Oh, stay like that. It was just like, yeah, it'd have been the granny on the top of the car with a gun, you know, with a shotgun.
Exactly.
You know, looking for oil and for whatever they call those walking cactuses. You know, I'm like, I'm going to shoot one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He tells me, you know, there's cactuses that walk out here. And I'm like, no. Don't tell me that. I don't want to see it. Okay. Anyway, I'm sure Dean wants to get in here. I know she's got some legitimate questions. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, I didn't get to read your book yet, but do you have any stories of like the truckers, their lives were saved because a spirit appeared at a certain time that slowed them down, you know, because if they would have went ahead, you know how things happen for a reason.
Sometimes
things will come into your path and slow you down, or somebody will go like 5 miles an hour in front of you, but then later on you'll see that they had a bad accident if you would have been going the same speed you were supposed to. You would have been in the accident. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, there were several in the book, and one of them was so moving that it is the final story in the book. And that is, just sorry, I know it is horrible to try to read. Okay, it's called The Unseen War. I actually got a trucker involved with this project because I realized really quickly that I needed to, because it's a pretty tight-knit community and you have to have credibility for them to trust you to tell you this stuff. There are trucker boards and things like that that are private, and I asked permission to get on and to post to look for stories And the Truckers Report was one of the few that granted me permission. I mean, you know, literally, like, that's so tight there. And I don't blame them, you know. I do not blame them for that.
And it's hard for guys to talk about things like that, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this guy, Terry Aldershoff, became a really good friend. And he actually was in the Monsters and Mysteries show with me. It was the first time we had met in person, and we had been, we worked together on Trucker Ghost Stories. He wrote a foreword that just knocked it out of the ballpark. He's a trucker. He was a career trucker, but he is an excellent writer. He actually wrote a book himself, had a lot of weird stuff happen in his life, and he has since passed away. But his story, the last one in the book, is just the best. No, it was called The Wall. That is the last story in the book. I'm not going to give that one away, but I will tell you a few of the shorter ones that were really cool. One was a guy who was driving a truck. He had to, and I'm not doing them justice because I'm not talking like a trucker because I can't capture it here. But he was driving alone, pushing it hard. He was tired. He needed to pull over. There was no place to pull over. He was trying to make it to a rest stop in the next state. And he looked over and he saw his dad sitting in the seat beside him, his dad who had died.
Oh, yeah.
So he said that, and I'm paraphrasing here. I did read a few of the stories before we came on the air because it's been a while since I put this collection together. But basically his dad said, you know, you need to rest. And he said, I can't. And his dad said, well, then I'm going to make you. And he said he woke up, parked correctly in a rest, you know, a roadside rest, highway rest stop or whatever they call them. And it was like miles down the road. And on his phone, there was a text from his dad. And it said, no load is worth your life. Love, Dad. Like, I thought that one was pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. And there, you know, there were several stories of people. One guy, and he had a couple of stories, but one of his stories was when he was driving on some road and it was night and he was tired and he heard clearly from inside his truck, Florelli, stop. And so he stopped, and then he looked around like, who said that? And then he realized there was a boulder in the road ahead of him, you know?
Wow.
I mean, I think somebody who interviewed me said, well, do you think the people are half asleep and they're just, and I said, yeah, I think that there is such a thing as road hypnosis. But to me, it doesn't mean that you're half asleep and hallucinating necessarily. That could be one thing that happens, but I think when you're in a relaxed, you know, like a beta state, or I'm not sure it's alpha, beta, delta, and theta, but I think it's beta that is the one that is, you know, like you're really relaxed, but your mind is alert, that you're tuned into different things, that you are actually perceiving things that are always there, but usually we have our consciousness is so distracted and busy and whatever that we're not perceiving them. So I feel like, I know when I drive, even if it's just a trip to St. Paul and Minneapolis, a lot of times I start tuning in without even meaning to about which car ahead of me is going to turn off, you know, put on their blinker and turn off on an exit, because I feel like it's easy to get into an altered state when you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, if that really... that involves rage too, road rage. Yeah. It takes me 5 minutes to get to one around where I live.
Well, go ahead. There are some like super spooky stories in this book too, and one of them was submitted. Actually, it was one that I found and I wrote to the guy and asked him if I could include it in this book. His name is Christopher O'Brien, and he was a musician who moved out to Colorado, I think in the 80s or 90s, maybe it was even earlier, but he was living out there during the time of the cattle mutilations, and there's a ton of UFO sightings and stuff like that. I love it. There's a dog on this show.
I know. It's my crazy dog.
Oh, yeah. You're making mine, too. That's awesome. We're just totally relaxed around here.
Oh, that's the way to do it, especially on a Friday night. Well, anyway,
I thought that was your dog. I didn't realize it was Bernadine's.
No, well, we had a really sweet dog, but she is in spirit now. It'd be pretty cool to get a visit from her, though.
Yeah.
But so anyway, Christopher O'Brien started like collecting stories of UFO sightings and experiences and high strangeness and all this weirdness. And one of his stories was that the uncle of the sheriff, or the uncle of someone who was in the police department somehow, said that he was driving his pickup one night, and it was late, and there was a woman in red hitchhiking, walking along the road. I guess she wasn't hitchhiking, and we just called the story Hitchhiker in Red. But and so he thought that, wearing a long red dress, and he thought that was weird, and wondered what she was doing out there. So he pulled over and he asked her if she wanted a ride, and she got in the truck without saying a word, and he went to ask her, you know, where she was going, and he looked and noticed, I wish I had the exact quote, but noticed that she had what was it, hooves, like cloven hooves instead of feet, and goat legs.
That's a first.
Of course, he was just like, and she just disappeared in front of his eyes. And the thing about this is that the nephew of the guy who had the experience, who had lived around there, you know, his whole life, the police officer or whatever he was, tried to talk his uncle out of making this report. Like, you don't want to do this. Maybe you were tired, you know, whatever. And the man insisted because he said it actually happened. So
I believe it.
Those are the kind of things I know you don't want to think about when you're driving across the tumbling, walking cactus highway.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like an angel visit.
No, it doesn't. I don't know, the whole idea, the lady in white, you know, on the side of the road. I mean, there's every state has stories about that, and it's just a common denominator in folklore. Interesting that this was red, right? I think it's just the way ghosts appear to people, but you know, everybody's like, oh, they have a lady in white on this road or that road, or you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that would be something that I would not want to happen to me. No hooves or anything.
that's just so I'm like, ghosts are one thing, but something that
demons and entities has,
are
an entirely different thing. I'm gonna go read it again, actually, after our show and our visit with you. I'm gonna go read it because I remember it vaguely, but I'm just gonna read the book again. I'm just such a fan of that, and you did it so well.
Thank you. I will send you a copy of my other two books, so don't go and buy them. I'll send you a copy.
Oh.
Well, I have a Kindle, but I'm going to read it on Kindle, but I'd like to have, I'll send you one of mine, too. We do reciprocals. I write about haunted New Orleans. They have some stories like that in New Orleans, you know. There's the white ladies and stuff like that, you know, don't pick up. Yeah, everybody's got the prom queen or something on the side of the road. She gets in. Every state seems to have that. And I noticed folklore, and just speaking in folklore, that way back when there were just horses and carriages, there were these instances of these, these women on this, or, you know, strange women, white dress, same sort of thing. You know, can you take me to my farm in this instance? And then there are some, there are people who speculate that a lot of time, especially in places like that are very rich in fairy lore, or, you know, in sort of the whole, the whole magical sense, like England, their roads, cut through so much history. And there was one woman who suggested that these are really like guardian spirits, female, like they appear as women. They're guardians of wells, stones, caves and places that were held sacred, and they just appear as, you know, in modern dress, because that's what we expect them to appear. And it's the same thing. They'll get in and they'll go a certain way, and then, you know, they never say, or they say, they just point to where they can be let off, and then they get out the car and disappear. I kind of agree with that. I think that's who do we know? You know, who knows?
Exactly.
Right. You know,
well,
go ahead.
I'm actually working with I do literary agenting right now, helping authors sell their books for paranormal and metaphysical books. Although I should say right now I have a full roster of clients. So for the time being, I'm actually not looking at submissions, but I keep that updated on my website. But there is so I'm working with Fintorn Press. And have you heard of Fintorn?
No, I'm sorry.
It says Fintorn in my mind for, you know, most of my life.
It How do you
was,
spell?
Okay, so back, Findhorn. It is in Scotland.
Fintorn, okay, yeah.
Yeah. In the 60s or 70s, my understanding, like a bunch of kind of hippie, net back to the earth, naturalist kids, teenagers, 20-year-olds went out there with the idea of, starting a commune. And they got this piece of land in Scotland that people were like, you won't be able to grow any food there because the land, you cannot grow anything on that land. Mm-hmm. They had the idea of working with the land spirits, cooperating with them and soliciting their help. And they ended up growing beautiful flowers and wonderful vegetables. And I just producing this incredible, it was verdant and it was productive land. And it was incredible. And people wanted to know how they did it. And then they told them that they were working with the land spirits. And I remember reading about it when I was kind of grade school or maybe junior high. And I thought, that is so cool. I want to do that. I want to work with land spirits. And I have always been interested, and it actually was, it became, it got so much attention that they built like a conference center, and then they had the publishing arm. And so, so it is really cool to me that at this point in my life, I'm actually working with Fintorn. Two of my clients have books coming out with them. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, especially now, look at the earth, look at things that we need to do. Wouldn't it be so cool and so amazing if all of us knew how to work with the earth and the elements and really, you know, grow more food and yet take care of the earth and find ways to produce energy that we're sustainable, you know?
The Green New Deal, but no, I'm making a joke, but that's the really Green New Deal.
Yeah. What if it could really be? I mean, if it has happened once, you know, if it has been shown that it can be done, why are we not doing it? It's, you know?
Because this world or where we are with mankind, most of mankind has no belief in anything, I think. You're talking about Scotland, and there's something about the British Isles. There is.
Yeah.
And if you do if you respect that and you don't assault it, like we have a way of throwing ourselves at it and we want to build, you know, metal, whatever. If you would treat it, I see what you're saying, that, you know, and I'm sure that happened. I know that happened. There are old books of fairy tales or just folk tales from different writers collected, you know, while they're going around, of exactly that, of a place that was known to be such and such for the fae or whatever. And, you know, as long as they showed it respect and they, not like worship, but they showed and demonstrated to whatever they couldn't see that they were willing to work with them and that they were willing to learn how to work with that, how to work with their particular whatever region or area, everything went fine, you know, until.
Yeah.
Somebody comes along and wants to tear it all down and, you know, build something. And then what happens is they turn against not only you, but the encroachers, and it can be very bad. And it seems to me that there must have been a lot of instances of very bad, too, because there are stories about, you know, falling out with the Fae, and you can see what happens after that, you know, so.
Yeah, you don't want to tick them off, that's for sure. I actually, when you said that, okay, so back where I used to work in St. Paul, it was a really cool old building on the edge of the Mississippi River. And I love trees. I mean, who does not love trees? But like our building had some trees that were not on our property, but on the parking lot that was across the street that everybody parked at. And I have to say, these three trees were the meanest trees I have ever met. I mean, they constantly... You'd walk, and it's like, how come they always get my hair caught in these branches? Like, they're not that low. And I was standing outside with one of my friends who was, he was a smoker, and I was visiting with him. And he wore glasses, and a leaf, a little pointy yellow leaf, came off this tree. You know, the wind blew and whatever. And it literally, like, floated around and then, boink, went under his glasses and poked him in the eye, a little sharp leaf. And I found out, I mean, I called them the mean trees. That became their nickname. But I found out years later when they were doing a building project there, a huge like condo development on the river, that when they did the soil testing, it was some of the most polluted land that was in St. Paul.
Wow.
I shouldn't say the most in St. Paul, but it was very, very polluted and it needed to be cleaned up. And I just went, oh, now I know why the trees were so mean.
That's what grows. That's right. That's exactly, I mean, that's what they're tapping into. And then, you know, just to beat back to England again, that whole thing about, you know, Blake and you know, the satanic mills and industry just destroyed the English countryside and everything. And then they had situations like that where they'd find people dead. And you know, like the managers of companies and all that were building, it's just, you know, yeah. I mean, if you look into the old, you know, the industry, Tolkien was like the last, he lived in Staffordshire, and he grew up there. And it's like, when you think of England with the rolling hills and the little patches of fields and the hedgerows and all, that's Staffordshire. And it's one of the there are some places in the Midlands where they didn't build, didn't take over. The industry had to be close to a port, thank God. And so you get places like Blackpool, Liverpool, Manchester in the north, York. And, you know, it's just, I hate industry. When people say steampunk, you remember this, Dean, because I got an argument with a guy about steampunk. And he, you know, I said, well, what is a steampunk? He says, well, steampunk is the future of a past that never happened. Okay, so I let that kind of like, okay. And I said, well, do you realize that, you know, these gears, I've always hated it, the gears and the machines and this, you know, this industry and these factories. I said, do you realize how many people died in those factories, the kids that had to work on those machines, those big machines and everything? I said, that's what it reminds me of every time I see these gears and loops and, you know, all of this. And he got really mad at me and told his wife, screamed at his wife and said, you need to come back, but whatever, stay away from her. I was like, well, I'm sorry to pop your bubble, but the reality is that when gears showed up, the whole world went to crap. Okay. When industry showed up, everything went to crap. And we still had a grasp on it, but we lost it, you know. And when you don't have that in you anymore, you lose touch with it.
Right. And look at the price. I want to say, since we're talking about this, another thing that is a real cause for hope is, remember the hidden messages in water? Masaru Emoto. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a scientist, right? He's a doctorate level scientist of some sort.
I don't know. Hang on a second. Dean, do you know, I don't know if you know of that book. I might have told you that
I've got it on my computer right now.
He did these experiments. The ones that I can remember is like, he had two jugs of water. let's say, and I'm probably just condensing it. And in one, he took a piece of paper or a piece of whatever, and he wrote the word hate on it, and he put it in the jug. And then he wrote the word love on another one. And they tested the water. Is it they tested the water, or the water turned foul over time in the hate?
Well, they actually did it.
I mean, I'm really simplifying it, but they did. He did a lot of other experience, but that's what I was just wanted to let Dean know what we're talking about.
Oh, I never heard of it, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, you
I actually had
it out. I mean, it was like the molecular structure of the water would
change
bond to energy. So you could, you know, if one group of people thought painful, hateful, evil, nasty things, that would affect the water's molecular structure. But also, if you thought positive, harmonious, uplifting things, you could change the water's molecular structure as well. I mean, think of the real implications of that if we really put some, you know, if governments and people put a lot of energy into that, that could make a difference. So, okay, I have a story for you that I have. Oh.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Kind of on the same thought. My sister works at the University of Minnesota, and she works with a woman who is from Iceland. And in Iceland, you know, they will actually reroute roads if they if the road would like go over they don't call it a fairy mound there, but it is, I think they call them, I was going to include this in one of my stories. Ones are the hidden people, the hidden, I'm sorry that I don't remember
That's
the exact
right.
term, but basically someone from the unseen realms, the beings from the unseen realms. So my sister is less into this than I am, but she did tell me the story, and she said this woman that she works with, she never would have imagined would, you know, tell this story and completely think this is what happened to us, and I'm telling it to you, that she was out walking with her teenage son, and he went to pick a flower off one of these mounds, and she said, don't do that, that doesn't belong to us, and he did. Mm-hmm. And she told him that he had made a mistake and that there would be a consequence, you know. It's like, so he didn't believe it. And that night, he put the flower in a vase on his dresser. And she said that night he woke up and one of these beings, and I think it's the hidden people, but was in his room and was looking at him. And he knew exactly what was going on, the kid, teenager, and this being, it was male, walked over to the vase, took the flower out, and disappeared. And the next morning, the flower was gone. I mean, how cool is that? I love that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to see him based on that reason, but yeah. I mean, stealing stuff. Iceland is on my bucket list. It's like before I die, I want to go to Iceland. You know, it's just it's just so magical. It's, I mean, Game of Thrones, North of the Wall, all of that is filmed in Iceland. And I would just love to go there. My daughter laughs at me because I don't particularly like the cold. You know, I have a reaction when I'm cold. I break out in hives. It's something called chilblains.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I break and it can close my throat and all that. So I was like, look, I'll go there and just you let me out the car and I'll go, look, there it is, and then get back in the car. But really, no, I would like to go there. It is. It's so magical. These viewpoints, you know, that preserve their connections to magic is just they're becoming less and less. I'm a Scorpio, so I'm always the half empty. So it's like, yeah, that's great, but are so few places that do that now. But seriously, you know, there's not enough people like that think like that. That think like you, that are willing to take the time with someone like, you know, the studying the water like that. Just something simple like that, and how much. Because when I think of water, I think it's wonderful. Like, especially if it's a hot day and, you know, you're out in the garden or whatever, it's just like so wonderful to turn the hose on or to get a drink of water. It's, I don't know why people why people don't understand the gifts and stuff that they, I must be getting squishy and old, but you know, it's like, it's such a gift. It's something so simple. And all at once, really, you're right, is to be appreciated. The trees too. So I thought you were going to say that, you know, the guy went out and smoked under the tree, because I hate that. I hate when people go out and have, you know, they'll have a cigarette and then just pitch the butt, you know, anywhere.
Oh,
and then,
no.
You know, it's so, and I wish the tree would just grab them when they do that.
Well, I was in Cuba with my husband about 9 years ago, and we were doing a walking tour with a young guy from this, it was a farming village, and there was this grand tree off in the distance, and it caught my eye, and we were visiting farms, and people were making coffee and rolling cigars and giving us rum. It was a great walk. But anyway, we ended up walking and then going up a really steep hill and through a cave and coming out the other side. And then I said, I would like to walk by that tree. And he said, well, that actually is part of the tour on our way back. So we walked up to the tree, and I was smoking a cigar, which I don't do very often, but in Cuba, I thought it would be a good thing to do. And I was smoking this little hand-rolled cigar as we walked up to the tree. And I said to my husband, this is a magical tree. And I want to, I think that the term, like, not in Cuba, but in a lot of countries for this kind of tree, is baobab, B-A-O-B-A-B. It's got like really big roots.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to sit on its roots, but I'm going to ask its permission first. And as soon as I said that, I tripped and my cigar rolled right up to the tree. And I said, it wants my cigar. It wants the cigar. So I said, okay.
You can go, but I'll take that cigar.
Yeah. Well, I put out the cigar, and then I laid it in the roots. And then I sat on the tree and I did a small meditation. And you know what? That tree was like a trunk that was probably 3 to 5 feet across. I mean, you know, the diameter would be massive, because the just one side, I'm saying, it was like 3 feet. It was just a huge, huge tree with great, great, you know, branches reaching out. But then we walked around the other side of the tree, and there were offerings all over the place.
Oh, wow.
Tucked in the roots. So the side we approached from was bare, and there was kind of a little cove in the roots on the far side of the tree, and people had little ribbons and little things of rum and cigars and cornmeal and coins.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I knew that was a magical tree.
That's New Orleans. That makes you, Dean, okay. That makes you think of the oak trees in Holt Cemetery.
Cemetery, yes.
Yeah, the Voodoo Cemetery. They have one tree, Annie, that was struck by lightning at some point between the visits, Dean and I, when we visited one time, because she lives away from New Orleans. She's about 2.5 hours away. Mm-hmm. And we had visited, and whatever we were doing, I don't know, taking pictures or whatever was done. And then we went back, and there was this huge, one of the old oaks had been, it was clove, you know, it was cloven, like cleaved right in the middle by lightning.
Oh.
And it was all what you're talking about. It was like just a ton of hoodoo, just offerings like that. Mayonnaise jar.
Inside the tree?
Inside the crack of the tree.
Yeah,
and
bottles,
notes. Bottles with notes and knives. Yeah. There was a knife stuck and with things underneath them. We, you know, Dean and I know, and we try to tell people, don't take or touch anything in this cemetery. This cemetery, even it's been rehabilitated a little bit in the last couple of years because the church has kind of like taken it under its wing. But it's still the Voodoo Cemetery. And not only that, it's witchcraft as well. I'm talking about serious old style witchcraft. And, that tree would be, with the lightning, it would be Chango, okay, which is the male spirit, the Lua, or I think, I don't know what he's equivalent to in Santeria, but it's like that. The different spirits will have like the rum, the cigars, gin, pork rinds, or fried pork chops, or it depends on who you're working with. But this thing was just littered with it. I mean, they took advantage of the fact that there was this lightning strike.
And it's a pauper cemetery. I mean, the bodies are not embalmed.
Right. We call it bury your own or bury yourself, because the family. It's an indigent cemetery, and it's a pauper, like the traditional pauper's feel, okay, where they bury. But if you're like, if you have no funeral plan or you have no plot, you can let the city know, and you can receive a plot there. And if you can just pick a space where there's no other grave, and just bury your loved one. And as long as you maintain that spot for your family, you can keep it. Your family can keep it, you know, year after year. Wow. In a lot of cases, though, the people don't keep them up, but in a lot more cases, they do. And so, like, when we go in there sometimes, and Dean can tell you, there's, you know, you, Uncle Joe died, you know, several years ago, let's say, and his wife, Aunt Sue or whatever. Now you got to dig up the grave, and you got to break up Uncle Joe yourself, because that's what this is, and you got to put Aunt Sue in. So invariably, on all of these piles, I know it's something.
You have teeth and bones that rise to the top.
Oh yeah, once they dig it up, they'll have to break up the coffin and the remains. So in any of these mounds, they have, like Dean says, teeth, finger bones, jawbone. You know, I think they tried it. You know, they would try to put the skull and stuff down. But I was out there. I rode through there one time, one day. I don't know. I was in the neighborhood, and there was this lone guy out in the middle, out in the middle, you know, Dean, where, like, this, it's like a circle you drive through. And he was out in the middle of those graves digging a grave. So I had a bottle of water. Actually, I went and got him some water. Some bottled water, and I brought it over to him. It was like July, and he's out there digging. I assume it's just he had a family member die, you know, so he had to go dig the grave for that. But you can walk through there, and you can see bones laying on the side of the road. You know, I mean, just seriously, get out the car, and there's a femur laying on the side of the road.
That's like so not that you're 2019. It seems like something from 100 years ago, or at least like 70 or 80 years ago, maybe. But wow.
Remember PVC pipe to make the square of the grave, or they have a baby's crib, or just a stick in the ground for the headstone with a boot on top of it.
There was one grave where they had the person's clothes. Yes. And they had laid them out, like the shirt, the pants, the socks, the shoes, like on top of the grave. And there was another one that Dean and we always talked about when we went in there. It's the one where it looked like they had, I know they had carpet samples, like a big piece of carpet, and it was held down with paint cans. Okay. That's real New Orleans. That's real New Orleans. And it's the reason they can bury in the ground there is that area is a little bit higher. It's above the aquifer limit, or they would have to have a tomb, you know, or they would have to put them in something.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. How could they?
The area where it is, it's west of New Orleans, going toward Metairie, which is in another parish, like the adjacent parish to New Orleans. But the area that it's located in, it's right next to Delgado Community College. And the land, you don't feel it because, you know, but the land actually starts to rise a little bit there away from the city. It's been that way for years and years. It was a pauper cemetery on the outskirts of New Orleans, you know, and all the other cemeteries like Metairie and the ones that people go and see, Greenwood and all, those were the limit of the city at one time, and then they had a pauper's field. There always was one, and, you know, but it's definitely the trees, if it feels bad in there, if I get like a nervous feeling and all, I don't even take my shoes. One time I stepped in mud, and I was out at the gate beating it off. The thing, one time you blow out your sandal. I didn't blow out my flip-flop, but I left them there. You know? And the other time was like, I called someone. I was like, I need these shoes and I can't get it off and I'm not taking this mud home. And she says, she's a voodoo priestess, right? She says, well, put 15 cents down at the gate. And I was like, but I said, I only got pennies and I got a dime. And she's like, well, count it out. And that's it. I left 15 cents. And I was like, and I said it when I left it. I said, I need these shoes or you could have them, but the only shoes I got. So I put the 15 cents down. I am not I don't want to be that person that does something stupid, right? And because I,
right,
Dean and I have observed the people in there doing something stupid, and life can go to hell pretty quick.
I was gonna say, I should come down. Like an invitation. Oh, I am gonna come. We were going to go to New Orleans. The November that my husband got sick, he had a stroke, and we have been limited travel since then. But that is one of our places we want to go, and I will definitely look you guys up.
Yes, let us know.
Yes,
because I want you guys to be safe when you come down here. Because right now in the city, it's tough, and crime is. But you know, we can get you set up with some tour or something like that, some ghost tours, and then we can go with you because this is something you'd really. It's a real taste of the way New Orleans used to be. It's always, you know, they had another cemetery by Bayou St. John that was the very first evidence of a burial. I can show you where that is, like if you come down. But it's in the built-up area right by City Park. But way back when Bienville came up the bayou, came toward New Orleans, they buried people there. They had to bury their dead somewhere. And that became a poor people's cemetery, too, until they either moved the bodies or plowed over it and built this big apartment complex up there. But before that, they had built like small houses. And one of my great aunts lived there in those houses, in one of the houses, and her house was haunted by a poltergeist. Because that means the graves are still there, you know, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, disrespected. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And now it's a high-rise apartment complex, you know, they had taken the houses out and built this whole modern thing. But yeah, we can show you all that. And those trees, on my Facebook page, I think I have an album with some pictures. Those trees have a life of their own. You can see that they have their moss hung. It's just so New Orleans. Cool. It's just so old. And so whenever you guys set that up, let us know. But I wanted to go and ask you a little bit about your house that you live in, because I'm reading that you do the tea parties and you have hauntings. And I just wanted to ask you about the spirits that you live with every day, you know, and how that goes.
Well, I can. And so I don't forget, I will say if either of you or both of you are in Minnesota, I guess it'll be summertime if you don't like cold, but please plan on stopping by for a tour and a tea or a glass of wine or whatever.
I keep telling you we have to do a road trip. I just can't be better.
Yeah.
I wish you were taking clients on because I'd ask you to be my agent, but maybe one time you get an opening. But we need to do that.
We'll talk. Yeah, we'll talk after.
Well, it's like poor as church mouse over here. But we say, yeah, road trip, and it's like, how much is gasoline?
We both had upheavals in our lives.
Dean's is more recent, but we're getting back to where she and I are kind of exploring, you know, where to take this YouTube channel show and stuff like that. You know, but definitely, yeah, Minnesota. What is the temperature where you are right now?
Well, we had a horrible last week of January and all of February, just like a snowstorm every two or three days. It was tough, even for Minnesotans. But right now, today, I think it got up to 50. It was sunny. It's been a week of melting, so we're so relieved. This was a very tough February.
Well, I'm glad you're not having anything like they're having over in Nebraska or anything. But as soon as that melts your way... That's coming down here. All that melt comes down to Mississippi. Yeah. We can handle it. It could flood again and it wouldn't bother me. Wipe some of the stupid people out. But I was reading a little bit about when you knew this house was what you were looking for when you saw it. And I just want to hear about some of the adventures that you've had in there.
All right. Well, my realtor and I had looked at many, probably 70 houses, all old, because I wanted an old house that I could fix up. And only one other one felt haunted. But this one, as soon as we stepped in, you could tell. And how it felt was heavy and watchful, like someone was right in your space bubble behind you. And he even said immediately, do you want me to see if the old man died in the house? Because we knew that.
Wow.
And I said, that would be good. and it turned out, I looked around and it was it's a big old house, really cool, built in like the 1870s. We're having a hard time pinning down exactly what year it was built, but I know for sure it was pretty much in its current state by 1885, with a few additions here and there over the years after that. It had been turned into an upper and lower duplex in the 1920s and then a triplex in the 1960s. But the triplex, well, all of the work had actually been done in a really skillful way, so it didn't destroy the house's integrity. But it felt kind of like a mouse maze when we first moved in, because the rooms had these, you know, small walls and mm-hmm. small rooms that we just took down some walls and we moved in, and it opened up and it's beautiful. But the back part of the house was where we felt the ghost, as we used to call him. Mm-hmm. And I could see, looking around, I grew up Catholic, that the ghost had been Catholic, because mm-hmm. there were religious medals over the doorways and windows that I recognized, palm fronds over the doorways too, and then even a light switch plate that we had when we were kids of a guardian angel with her arms around two little kids. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so the ghost is Catholic, so at least we have that in common, because I loved the house. I it put a spell on me. I wanted it. And as over the years, we have come to know some of the main house spirits, and they are people who have lived here in the past. Leon was the old man who lived here before us. He is an ally. I have come to know him as an ally in the spirit world. He looks out for this house from the spirit level, because it's a real wide open house. There are three portals in the house and one outside. There are two old-fashioned spirit girls that lived here in the late 1800s. We have been able to identify Leon and the spirit girls from pictures once I did research when I wrote my book. There is a ghost cat, a white ghost cat that has been seen by more than one person. And then there have been just a host of other astral visitors and entities, and maybe entities is too strong a word, but Leon does come to me in dreams and gives me information, but he never speaks. But he helps me. He will point or lead me someplace. And I'm trying to decide if I should go into that story, or I wanted to tell you one story about when we were talking about the hitchhiker in white, or the lady in white on the side of the road, and then the story that I had about the hitchhiker in red who was like,
We got time.
Do we need to wrap up? Okay.
No, we have time. Oh, okay. I was trying to plug something in. No, we have time for that. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll wrap up around 5:02. It's 10:30 right now.
Oh. Okay. So one of the things that one of the beings that I saw here, because as I said, this house is just kind of wide open. That's why I work really hard to keep the energy positive and balanced in this house. I consider myself a caretaker of the house in the physical world. Leon is a caretaker in the spirit world. And so I had come home from work. At that time, my kids had, my kids are grown up. They had grown up. They had moved out. I was at the kitchen stove making soup and, not thinking about ghosts. It was like the end of a work day. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw like a dark, big, dark shadow standing in a double doorway that we have between the kitchen and the living room. And so I turned and looked directly at it, and it was like a dark blob. You've heard of shadow people. Mm-hmm. This was not a shadow person, because it didn't have a silhouette of like a man with a hat. This was just a big, inky, dark blob in the doorway, floating about 2 feet off the ground, mm-hmm. and maybe like 5 feet tall. And I looked at it, and I was just thinking, like, what am I looking at? I mean, my first thought was that it had to be a shadow being cast by something, you know, like what mm-hmm. is cast in that shadow. And all of a sudden it just like, it would, I would say scurried if it had legs, but it just like, pew, like right out mm-hmm. of that doorway and through a smaller doorway into the front hall. And it was so startling to me. It was like, it saw me look at it and it got freaked out. Like it was, boom, I'm out of here. And I was so freaked out that I grabbed my phone mm-hmm. and I called my boyfriend at the time. And I said, I need you to, obviously he wasn't here. He lived in Minneapolis. But I said, I need you to stay on the phone with me because I just saw something. I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's like something in my house that is alive or not alive. Like, I don't know if there's a person in my house that somehow cast a weird shadow and he just took off running. And so I walked through. I mean, obviously the thing had to be in the front hallway, or I didn't hear anything go up the stairs. I didn't hear anything go out the front door, and there was nothing.
Mm.
But I have told, when I tell kids ghost stories, I don't tell them any super spooky ones. So I tell them the story and I just called the thing Bob the Blob. Just to let them know that ghosts can be afraid of them too. So, but yeah, like that, this house is interesting. I mean, I don't think I could live. I think it would be very hollow and quiet to live in an unhaunted house. Now, on the other hand, I don't want to live. I stay away from dark stuff. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't even accept books that have like super duper bad stuff. It's like I don't mm-hmm. want that kind of energy. I don't want to get involved with it. So yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying. We coming from the experiences that I had, because my house was, I had demonic hauntings in the house that I grew up in. Yeah. And, you know, it's a long story, but coming from that and the leftovers and residual of that, every place I've lived pretty much has been, you know, had some spirit too, but I'm actually looking for that place. Well, and where I am now in this house that we recently bought, there's no negative energy that we felt. There's not a lot of history, so we can make our own, you know, but coming from mm-hmm. the background, it's like, I'm happy if there's no, you know, no spirits, nothing to do with the land. Everything felt really good because I think that we were led, you know, which is probably the way you right. felt, you know, about your house, that we were right. drawn to it for different reasons. You being basically a caretaker there, you know, and a historian mm-hmm. preserving the story. But here it's like, and I'm sure Bernadine, you're the same way. You're looking for that house. It's like, okay, you know, mm-hmm. it's not going to haunt me tonight. You know, the one that I lived in with my dad a few years ago was over 100 years old, and it was haunted. It really was. And okay. I don't know if anything ever happened to you, Dean, but I know the house was haunted, and it was getting more active when he passed away. So I was kind of glad to move out in a way, because I didn't know what it was going to do, you know, at that. So, and right. I didn't want my dad to be stuck there, you know, but right. anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we, I could handle something like that, but I would prefer not to, really, because I did it my whole freaking life. You know, runaway right. scared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
And is that the house that was built on the burial ground? Or
my house?
You didn't live in those little houses? Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. That's a different house. That was way, those houses okay. on that original burial ground were back in the... Yeah. The early, like the 1920s, maybe 1910s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's when they were there, and gotcha. Then there was four now. Well, yeah, we lived in a regular brick suburban home, three bedroom, 1970s, mid century, whatever style, avocado and harvest gold, everything.
Oh, that's funny.
Brand Great. New, but built on something. And then my mother, which is why Dean and I. Our focus is on the dangers that people can get themselves exposed to when they, you know, investigate the paranormal, the supernatural mm-hmm. dangers. That's what we talk about, because it looks like the most innocent house in the world. But my mother was at the time into all the ESP and, you know, and then it's not a far leap, especially in New Orleans, where you go into occultism or you go into the occult practices and you you know, divination. And she just went whole hog into it. And a lot of things she did actually contributed to the haunting that we ended up having to deal with. But no, that was an innocent looking house.
It is funny, isn't it?
It's like the most unassuming, you know?
Well, I tell, when people come to my house, they're like, oh my gosh, your house doesn't look haunted. It looks so cheerful and happy and bright. And I'm like, that's exactly how I want it to look, cheerful and happy and bright. Like, I do not want it. It was, when I moved in, it was quiet and kind of forlorn. And it was like time had stood still. I mean, it really was. And one of the things I said in my book was, it was kind of like even the dust was watching and waiting and felt like it was 100 years old. But it didn't feel evil. And that was one reason why I thought, okay, well, for one thing, I thought there was only one ghost. And for another, I was like, I knew that the old man's wife had not passed away, that she was alive, living in a care facility, and his daughter, you know, was taking care of her. And so I'm like, oh, he's probably just waiting till his wife's time comes, and then, you know, they will go to the light together. So it really was fun to live here and try to figure out what was going on. And, you know, what it turned out, there was hidden money in the basement.
Wow.
We found that, and then we're like, oh, now we know, now he'll go to the light. But he didn't. But he did show up to say thank you. And one of the, I mean, I observe things. Like, I wish I were more psychic than I am. I love it when my friends come over who can really communicate with spirits really well and clearly. But I feel that I'm more of a scribe. Like, I'm just telling the story. I'm observing what's happening and telling the story. But, I'm losing my train of thought on this.
Now, you're talking about how the spirit didn't go. He stayed, even though, after you found the money and everything.
So, and that's when, thank you, and gradually that we learned that he was a helper. Like, he was here looking out for the house and for us. And we learned this both through the things he did and through the many different psychics that I've had visit my house, and also paranormal investigation groups. There's a lot of material on my website that is like pictures people have taken or EVPs that they've caught, videos. It's been on some local TV shows too. And one of the things, you said that you were drawn to your house, or that people get led to a house. And Leah,
I was fixing to ask you that question. When you first seen your house, did you feel like it was yours already before you got it?
Well, I thought it looked like a school. I thought it looked like an old-fashioned school, which was a really interesting impression to have, because I have learned so much being here. And Leon's daughter, when we were at the closing, and she didn't, we didn't meet before that day. We just met, you know, she flew in from out east and signed the papers. And I was wearing, weirdly enough, I had brought nicer clothes to her to the closing, but I couldn't find them in the confusion of the move, because we were moving that day. So I was wearing a sweatshirt that said, out of body, back in 5 minutes. And I noticed her looking at it, but
I need that shirt.
She didn't say anything. Yeah, it was fun. But she said when they went out, that, you know, two people, like the realtors, left the room to make a copy of something. She looked at me and she said, "The house chose you. Did you know that?" And I said, "Ooh, like how cool to have a stranger say that to you." And I said, "The house chose me. What do you mean?" And she said, "Well," she said, "we had no offers for 6 months. And then we had three offers within 1 week."
Wow.
And she said, "and I asked my dad," no, she knew that I knew he was no longer living. She said, "I asked my dad which offer to accept. And he told me to accept yours."
Yeah.
Wow.
She said, "and yours was not the highest." Yeah.
So, but it was the one he wanted. That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and when we found the money buried in the dirt room in the basement, As soon as we found it, because we knew that the house was haunted, I actually had woken up to just incredibly loud pounding. Like, I mean, if you guys have heard ghost noises, they can be just unnaturally loud. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have experienced that, but okay.
Yeah.
So
especially during renovation. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. They don't like home repairs a lot of times, or it riles them up. But yeah, so I woke up to a woman's voice, first of all, that sounded really hollow and electronic. And it sounded like it was coming out of my daughter's room. And I'm like, oh my God, the ghost. Because we thought, oh, the old man ghost, he can have the back room in the house, and where we just have all the extra boxes right now, and we'll just have the rest of the house. And, you know, our bedrooms were upstairs. And my first thought was like, there's more than one ghost. Mm. And they're upstairs too. Like, oh dear, this was not what I thought I was getting into. And then after the voice stopped, I just got this like rush of melty hot fear. And all of a sudden the pounding started. It was just so loud. I'm like, what is that? Like, is it radiators? Like, we had moved in on April 15th and I didn't even know if the radiators were on. Like, I didn't even know if the furnace was on. So finally I decided I had to just get up, go grab my kids, both teenagers. Like, I probably wouldn't have moved in here as a single parent with little tiny kids. That wouldn't have felt good. But mm-hmm. my daughter was a blue haired punk rocker at the time. And my son was, in full-on Elvis impersonation mode for like 2 or 3 years when he was in junior high and early ninth grade. So I'm like, oh, if anything, they'll probably convince the ghost to go to the light. But anyway, so I sat up. I'm like, I have to grab my kids. And as soon as I sat up, the noise stopped.
Mm.
And then I was like, first relief, and then the realization it knows what I'm doing.
And it knows what you're like, thinking.
Yeah, I didn't even get that far. So when
that's when you start shouting, "Hey, whoever you know, your kids, come in here!" You know, it's like,
oh. Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
Well, and they didn't hear anything. And that is one other thing we've noticed here. A lot of times, if there is a ghost experience that someone is "quote unquote" supposed to experience, no one else will wake up or hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also had times where we all wake up and we all hear the same thing, but sometimes it's just one person getting the experience. And you've heard that about, you know, so many spooky things where the person is beside you in bed, but you can't wake them up. Or I don't think we have aliens in our house, but I've heard that with alien abductions too, that, you know, the person next to you in the bed. Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, if you're the only one, I lived in that house. I grew up in that house. It was in Eastern New Orleans, and I would hear stuff. I don't know how. I mean, you're sitting there going, how did they not hear it? You know, and mom and dad are asleep, exactly. And you're like, the freaking kitchen furniture is moving around. It sounds like somebody broke in the window, you know, and they're, and you're the only one who heard it, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, people can point and say, oh, well, you're a big scary cat. You write all these stories and all. But, it, you know, no, the day that I'm not, that I don't have that little bit of fear when something like that happens is when something bad is really going to happen. You know, it's like I don't choose to deal with that. I don't want to hear a poltergeist stacking the chairs in the kitchen necessarily. But, you know, and I don't want to see it. But, you know, it's like, you have to have that little bit of wholesome, like, hesitation. There's not just run in and say, yay, it's a poltergeist, you know, yay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because things are tormenting. Yeah. You know, if they're the kind that are tormenting you, you're afraid of that. I mean, because, like, you didn't know what that was that woke you up. You're sitting in a state of, and, you know, it's fear is the first thing you feel. And, you know, anybody who says that it doesn't scare them, then there's a problem. They should have at least a little bit of fear that this should be unnerving, because that's your fight or flight instincts that are kicking in, you know?
Yes, I get very concerned when I see people like provoking. And in my house, the only
time. Don't let them do that in your house.
essay. No, answers
I have very strict rules. I'm like a school marm. Like investigation group comes in, I talk to the leader. I look at their website. I make sure that we have a clear understanding of what will be done, what won't be. You know, pictures approved before they get posted. And my rules are that I need to be here for one thing, and I need to know that my house will be treated with respect, that I will be treated with respect, and that the spirits will be treated with respect, and that nothing will be called in that isn't here. You know, it's amazing to me how foolhardy some people can be.
Reckless. That's exactly what we literally talk about it all the time. And some people make fun of us, you know, it's like, it's just so many people are investigating the paranormal, and a lot of them that we've encountered don't believe in the supernatural. And our point is like, how are you going to know, you know, when you encounter the supernatural, unless you know that A, it's real, and B, how it acts when you encounter it, you know, what's going to happen. You don't, you know, they have their own rules in their reality, you know, and it affects us differently or in different ways because it's not our rules that they're living by. We're experiencing them acting like they act. And if you don't know how they act, and that goes from anything from just a human ghost all the way to a demon, then you shouldn't, you know, not meaning you, but you in general shouldn't be investigating, and you should not be investigating in anybody's home. Period.
Oh my gosh. Right. Exactly right. Bringing stuff in. Yeah. There's,
you have to live there, right?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So you've heard of Robert the Doll. Okay. So Robert the Doll, I went to Key West with my son and his buddy to
We just got a few minutes here, so make it quick.
Okay.
I just don't want to miss this.
Yeah, Robert the Doll, you have to ask his permission before you take a picture. It's written on the thing. And so I took a picture and I put on Instagram. I'm like, Robert the Doll, yes, we asked permission. And I said to the woman at the desk, I'm like, do people ever not ask his permission? And she's like, yes. And she said, and you know what? She said, we get probably 2 to 3, I can't remember how many items, like back per week that people have purchased here. Just in the, you know, the candy or the gum or the little trinket or whatever. And they're like, just keep it. Mm-hmm. My house is haunted now. I don't want it. Like, so people are experiencing stuff to the point where they're going to the mailbox, putting something in and mailing it back that they bought and get this out of my house. It's real.
It is real. Yeah. And how many years we've been saying that, you know, it's like I mean, we don't have the time to get into it, but it's real. And if you're a so-called professional, quote unquote, and you don't know how, you know, let's say an elemental spirit is going to interact with you when you find out it's there, you should be doing another hobby, you know, because there are some things that'll stay with families forever. I mean, obviously you have a spirit that is staying with its home, but there are some things that just attach and they just haunt the next generation and the next generation. Try to make people aware of the fact that, you know, okay, say you're a skeptic, but you at least have to have some respect, you know, thousands of years of occult tradition that tell you when you encounter such and such a spirit or this demon, whatever by name, which you shouldn't be doing anyway, this is what's going to happen to you, okay? And this is how they're going to act in your reality. And more than half of these people out there don't know it, and they don't care to learn. So so we'll have paranormal shows.
Michelle Belanger's book, I think you had her on as a guest. It's the Ghost Hunter Survival Guide or something. It's one of the best. It talks about boundaries, like clear boundaries and respect. Mm-hmm. Those are two of the best things that people can do to protect themselves.
Right. And I wouldn't want to say enemy, but know who it is that you're looking for. Know what, you know, when you're going to meet it, know what it is, you know, and so you'll know what it's not. In other words, Dean and I, you know, we pound that in. We try anyway, but we're out of time. Unfortunately, we would like to invite you back right now, so you can come back on another show whenever your schedule is good. But if somebody wants to get in touch with you, you mentioned your website, and maybe somebody local wants to have a tea party or come to your house. How do they get in touch with you?
My website is AnnieWilder.com. Tea parties are probably still on sabbatical this year. We're slowly, I'm going to do some spirited schoolhouse events, which this year will be, I'm planning, spirit message circles, where I have mediums come in and deliver individual messages to the guests from loved ones in spirit. Yeah, it's really fun and very moving. Sometimes, you know, lots of laughs. It's cool. And then I'm going to invite back, I haven't done so yet, but I'm going to invite back a crystal ball reader who was just incredible. It was so much fun. It was so much fun to learn about a crystal ball.
We wish you were closer because we'd go.
His crystal ball has a name. He introduced it. I mean, it was really cool. When he first brought it over here, he said, I had him come here and do a reading for me before I set up this event. And after about half an hour, he said, I need to stop now. And I said, why? And he said, because I can see my own eyes looking out at me from the crystal ball.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, okay, time to go.
Yep, time to go.
But anyway.
I hit the ball and everything. Well, we would we're going to try. Dean and I need to put our heads together and see what we can do. I mean, after all, I drove to New York in November and was there for the historic snowfall and stuff. But and back again. It's like the Hobbit, you know, it's there and back again. But getting home was the thing. So, but anyway, yeah, we would love to come. And if you come to New Orleans, you definitely get in touch with both of us and we'll set you up. We'll see it. We'd love to meet you and everything. But we have to wrap up now. So thank you. This is Annie Wilder that we've been talking to. She's the author of Trucker Ghost Stories and several other good books. So check her out. It's AnnieWilder.com. And she has all the info there. Thank you again for being our guest.
Yes.
Thank you both so much. Really enjoyable.
I'll email you and we'll exchange addresses and I'll send you a book. So, and then if you can send the other books, that would be great. But we'll talk about it then. Thank you again and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Annie.
Good night.
Bye.
Yep, good night.
Road trip. How many times are saying road trip again? I could tell stories like that all night, but we can't. So folks, you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network. I'm Eileen Pistanio, Bernadine LeBlanc. Say goodnight, Bernadine.
Night night.
Remember, United Public Radio is an iHeartRadio partner. We are at all archives everywhere. Just Google us. We're all over the place. And you can find either Bernadine or I through Facebook or Tumblr, etc., everywhere else. We're on social media from yin to yang. So tune in again next Friday for another great guest. And you guys have a great weekend. And say goodnight, Bernadine.
Good night.
Nighty night.
Night night. Bye-bye.
Link. Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. That au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
Calling all podcasters, musicians, vloggers, and reporters, and everyone else who wants crystal clear recording that's super portable. The Shure Motive family of microphones makes studio quality audio that's as simple as plug and play. Many of the world's top podcasters rely on Shure, and with a Motive line of iOS and USB microphones, portability is now your friend. Imagine being able to get great audio quickly and easily from your phone, tablet, or computer. Simply visit Shure.com/motive to start getting great audio for your content now. That's Shure.com/MOTIV.